there's no room, no space to rent in this town. You're out of luck, and the reason that you had to care, the traffic is stuck. Good morning and welcome to the Health Matters Radio Show. It's Monday, it's the 8th of July 2019. I'm Neil De Silva and I hope you've all had a great weekend and you're all raring to go for the week ahead. On today's show, we are going to have a chat about fad dieting. Now, for those of you that know me personally or through networking, then you'll know how anti-fad dieting I am. But I'm going to sort of give you some advice and some guidance and some pointers to allow you to spot the atypical fad diet and some tips as to how, if you need to lose weight, how you can do so in a healthy and sustainable way. We'll also be talking about workplace health towards the end of the show, which will continue into next week's show when we will talk about stress in the workplace. And in the middle, in about 20 minutes, we have our special guest interview of the day today. We have Bronwyn Rich from This Way Up Wellbeing. It's great to have you on the show today, Bronwyn. Thank you for coming on.
Thank you, Neil.
We'll be talking more with Bronwyn in about 20 minutes, around 25 past 11. So a quick disclaimer before we start the show. The purpose of the Health Matters Radio Show is to provide you with competent information on the subject matters covered and to help educate and inform you in ways that you can improve your own health. However, this is on the understanding that I'm not engaged in providing medical advice and the content in the show should not be treated as a substitute for such. If you have any concerns about your general health or you require medical or other expert assistance, please speak to a suitably qualified healthcare professional, which in many cases can be obtained by dialing 111 or speaking with your local pharmacist first. All the content is provided for general information only, and I encourage you to do your own research on the topics and the products that we discuss. The show is based on my knowledge, my research, my opinion, and often my experience, and I disclaim any liability that is incurred from the use of or application of the show. So a quick reminder of the show's social media feeds before we kick off. On Twitter, it's at Health Radio Show. On Facebook, please search the Health Matters Radio Show and you can like the show's Facebook page. You'll be able to listen again to this show and all previous 64 shows that I've done on the media page of my website, which is www.i-nutrition.co.uk. And also, if you've got iTunes and you like podcasts, you can also subscribe to the show's podcast. Simply go to iTunes and search the Health Matters Radio Show. So on to our first topic of the morning, which is fad dieting. Now, in the UK, we have an obesity crisis, as most of the Western world does. I think recent statistics showed that in Europe, we have the worst obesity crisis. We are some way behind the States, but in the European Union, we have the biggest obesity crisis. And losing weight, losing body fat, getting down to a trim weight, a healthier weight, is actually good for you, not just in the short term, but also in the long term as well. You know, carrying too much weight increases the risk of things like heart disease, stroke, type 2 diabetes. And recently, for those of you that listened to the news last week, it was announced that obesity is, I think, second only to smoking in causing cancer. So it's a very serious issue. It's not about just carrying a little bit too much weight. Actually, it has a massive impact on your long-term health. Unfortunately, lots of companies take advantage of that. They capitalise on people that get desperate to lose weight, that want quick fixes. And hence, we have all these new diets, these programmes, these books by celebrities, getting us to follow a certain eating plan or exercise plan. But you know, these are popping up at a rate of knots, okay? You know, if these diets were so effective, then why are so many new ones popping up? So there's a huge choice, and not all of them. I would argue that most of them are not particularly good for you. So when we talk about diet, what is a diet? Well, a diet is simply a change in what you eat, a change in how you think about what you're eating, and sometimes a change in how much you're eating. Now, weight loss on its most basic level is calories in, calories out. It is actually more complicated than that. But if you eat loads more than you burn, energy cannot be destroyed. It just gets transformed from one form to another. It's a basic law of physics. So energy that you consume in what you eat and what you drink that you don't then burn at some point is going to get stored. Okay, like I say, it's a little bit more complex than that, but that's its basic in-out formula. Equally, if you want to lose weight and burn more than you consume, then you will often lose weight. So that's the basic premise of a diet. And weight loss, generally, a weight loss diet will involve cutting out or limiting certain types of food and drink and replacing them with healthy, more nutritious options. Okay, so it's not just about losing weight, it's about being healthy. And for those of you that know me or my clients, you'll know that my focus is always, even when someone needs to lose a huge amount of weight, it's about improving their health first and foremost, not about losing weight. If you improve someone's health through a better diet, then generally the weight will take care of itself. If you focus just on losing weight over and above anything else, then you can often damage your health. So what is a fad diet? A fad diet is an eating plan that often promises rapid weight loss. Okay, so these are advertised through the media, through network marketing companies in some cases. They're not usually based on science. They don't have a lot of clinical research to back up their claims. A lot of fad diet companies use research that they often instigate, they control, and they fund. Okay, so it's not often unbiased, and it's not often a fair picture of what that diet entails. Fad weight loss diets want you to cut out certain food groups in some cases, and one of the dangers of doing that is it could mean that you don't get all the nutrients that your body requires. There is a diet, I'm not going to mention it, that basically cuts out all carbohydrates. And actually, yes, some carbohydrates are not particularly good for you, particularly the sugary ones. But actually, in carbohydrates, there are some essential nutrients that the body requires that if you cut out, can damage your health long term. So you need to choose an eating plan, an exercise plan that's healthy, that suits your lifestyle, that will help you to change the way that you think so that it's not a quick fix. It's not a short-term plan. It literally is a change in the way you eat for the rest of your life. And that's the only way you're really going to keep off the weight long-term. And the problem with some of these products, some of these pills and potions and shakes, is you're kind of stuck on them because they don't deal with the education side. They don't deal with the psychological issues around losing weight and being healthier. All they do is they say, take this particular product, and you get scared to stop because as soon as you stop, you go back to all the old habits and the weight goes back on. So you're kind of stuck on them, and there is a better way. Now, there are risks with fad dieting. As I mentioned, health is the most important thing you should think about. Even if you do need to lose a lot of weight, focus on improving your health, your energy levels, your sleep quality. Focus on eating food and drinking drinks that are going to improve your health, and the weight will generally take care of itself. But a problem with fad diets is they can slow the body's metabolism because they focus just on weight. Often they focus purely on calorie deficit, and actually long-term calorie deficit can slow down the body's metabolism, which means that if you do go back to eating normally or all those old habits creep back in, you've now got a slower metabolism with more calories. And actually this is the classic yo-yo diet. You do a quick fix, you lose a couple of stone, you don't really deal with the real root problems of weight gain, you stop that particular plan, you go back to your old habits, the weight goes back on and then some, and then you continue on that yo-yo. You lose some weight, you gain the weight, you lose the weight, you gain the weight. Some people go for years doing this, sometimes decades. And it just goes to show that these fad diets really don't deal with the root cause of weight gain. And equally, if they don't deal with the root cause of weight gain, they can't deal with the root cause of weight loss or the solutions. Some other risks of fad dieting include feelings of hunger, so deprivation of food because it's often low in calories. That can lead to food cravings and also an increased appetite. And you know what? It can make your life really miserable. If you eat proper whole foods and you learn what's good for you, then if you eat proper good foods, then you will often not feel hungry as much. But if you start on a low-calorie, processed fad diet, then that can lead to an increased appetite. And it can just make your life miserable. Fad dieting will often, as I mentioned, will often involve rapid weight loss followed by rapid weight gain. In more serious cases, it can lead to eating disorders like anorexia nervosa and also bulimia. You can lose muscle tissue. It can lower your bone density. It can cause headaches, insomnia and fatigue. And also some of them can cause constipation and often diarrhea. Now, if you focus on improving your health, you really don't want any of those, do you? So my advice is avoid these fad diets because they can be damaging for your health in the long term. And they're just not sustainable. So how do you spot a fad diet? Well, like I said, they promote very fast weight loss. There are often real people out that say, you know, I lost a stone in a week, which is, you know, I'm a nutritionist, you know, that's really not healthy, okay? And it's not just about losing weight, it's about losing body fat. And often if you lose weight quickly, you can lose muscle mass and you'll often lose water as well because it's just the chemical changes that happen when you do a very low calorie diet. So that quick weight loss will often be promoted by fad diet companies and they'll reel out their success stories. And they'll think that everyone can do it. And that can be quite damaging, not just physically, but also psychologically as well. They often focus on short-term changes to eating or exercise. It'll be a quick fix, not a long-term strategy. They'll include often pills and potions and shakes, which if you read the ingredients labels, and I really encourage people to read the ingredients labels, particularly of the shakes, they're often highly processed and they are full of sugar. They imply that food can change body chemistry, that there's some miracle foods, which is like a load of rubbish. They'll exclude or severely restrict food groups. As I mentioned, there's some out there that restrict carbohydrates down to a dangerously low level, which is not sustainable and can be quite damaging to your health. They often have rigid rules that focus purely on weight loss. Again, no focus on improving your health. They'll make claims based on a single study, and often that study will be funded by the company themselves, or they'll have fake testimonials. They're not sustainable. They focus purely on calorie deficit. And the most important thing, and I will reiterate this again because it's a real passion of mine, they will focus on just losing weight and not improving health. That's not the way to do it. If you want to lose weight and be happier and healthier in the long term at the same time, you've got to focus on eating the right things to improve your health and not worry so much about the weight. It might take you a bit longer to lose the weight, but you will keep it off. So how do you lose weight healthily? Well, the amount you eat is important, but also having a healthy lifestyle and having plenty of exercise is important as well. But in terms of food, you know, vegetables, different coloured vegetables, eating a variety of fruits, lean meats, poultry, fish, eggs, nuts and seeds. I say to people, you know, in 10,000 years, the human body hasn't changed that much, but our diet has changed hugely. Eat the things that the human body was designed to eat, you know, the nuts, the seeds, the berries, the vegetables that we grow in the ground, the fruit that we picked off trees, the fish that we fished, the animals that we hunted. You know, those are the sorts of things that the human body is designed to work on, not all the processed junk that we have in our diet today. Reduced fat, yogurt, milk, cheese are good for you, and obviously drinking plenty of water. But in addition to what you eat, you should do things like have smaller portions, eat a wide variety of food, make sure that you exercise, eat lots of fibre. Fibre fills you up. We are fibre deficient today. Most people don't eat anywhere near the amount of fibre that they should do. Limit the saturated fat and moderate your total fat intake. Keep to foods that are quite low in salt, because salt has health implications. If you drink alcohol, limit the amount of alcohol that you consume, perhaps cut it out altogether. And stay away from artificially sweetened or generally sweetened products. So, you know, cans of fizzy drinks and those sorts of things, chocolate, they're not good for you. If you're trying to lose weight, they're not good for you. But also, if you're trying to improve your health, they're really not good for you as well. And take time to feel good about yourself, okay? So there's a big psychological side to losing weight and keeping it off, okay? Don't get hung up by these unrealistic images that are portrayed in the media. Be focused on you and your health. If you do it in the right way, you will keep the weight off, but you'll be healthier with it as well. I stress again, it's not just about how much you weigh, it's about how that weight's made up, and it's also about how healthy you feel. Because if you lose some weight but you feel rubbish doing it, what's the point? So hopefully there's some tips there that will be able to help you. Again, as always, if you'd like to contact me away from the show and away from social media, you can do so through my website, which is www.i-nutrition.co.uk. After the break, we will be going on to our special guest interview with Bronwyn. But before that, we have a song to take us there, and it's I Got a Feeling by the Black Eyed Peas.
Like on my God,
jump out that sofa.
Come on,
let's get off.
again.
Let's do it, let's do it, let's do it, let's do it. And do it, and do it, let's live it up. And do it, and do it, and do it, do it, do it. Let's do it, let's do it, let's do it, do it, do it, do it, do it.
Here we come, here we go, we gotta rock.
You're listening to the Health Matters Radio Show on Monday, the 8th of July. I'm Neil De Silva, and we're going to go on to our special guest interview in a moment. But before we do that, a quick reminder of the show's social media feeds. On Twitter, it's at Health Radio Show. So you can follow the Twitter feed, you can like it, you can retweet my tweets. That will be really useful. Thank you very much. On Facebook, if you search the Health Matters Radio Show, you'll be able to like the show's Facebook page, and you'll be able to listen again to this show and all previous shows that I've done on the show's media page on my website, which is www.i-nutrition.co.uk. And also, if you've got an Apple device and you like podcasts, go to iTunes, type in the Health Matters Radio Show on the podcast page, and you can subscribe to the show's podcast and listen to all the previous shows there too. So on to our special guest interview of today. Today we have Bronwyn, and Bronwyn is from a business called This Way Up Wellbeing. And I must admit, when I first heard that business name, it was quite intriguing. And it's certainly a subject matter that's close to my heart. And I'm looking forward to finding out more about what Bronwyn's been doing, how she got into what she does now, and also how she might be able to help you or someone that you know. So, Bronwyn, thank you for coming on the show this morning.
Thank you for having me on the show.
It's really good to have you on, and I'm really looking forward to this. So let's start at the beginning. Let's start with your background. What's been your journey up to where you are now? How did you get into doing what you do now?
Okay, well, my background is I've always worked in the health and social care sector in some form or another.
Mm-hmm.
I started off working with children and families, vulnerable children and families, so around safeguarding and child protection issues. And then I went in to do some community development work. And along that journey, one of the things that I noticed was there was always seemed to be some underlying mental health issues or concerns that affected my clients in one way or another. And often these issues that they were dealing with were going unrecognized and unresponded to, especially with some of the children and young people. I was working with looked after children, so some of the most vulnerable in our society that had obviously experienced some level of trauma, most of them had, not to say all of them had, and they didn't have the skills or tools to deal with some of the deep emotional crisis that they were in. And equally, the staff weren't trained in any kind of models to deal with it. So as I began, sort of went through my career, I began to set up different projects for parent volunteers. And along the way, I came across mental health first aid, commissioned some training for some of the staff and volunteers, and it was the best training I'd ever been on. And I just decided that it was something I wanted to move forward and spread the word and become an instructor. And it morphed from there, really, in terms of when the project closed, some of the service users wanted us to continue So I set up an organisation, a social enterprise, so that I could continue the work outside of the organisation I was involved in, so that we could continue to provide support for mental health and well-being.
Wow. Quite a journey.
Yeah.
Quite a journey. And I think you'll agree that I think mental health is much more in the spotlight now.
Absolutely.
And quite rightly so.
Yeah.
And I think certainly over the last sort of 10, 20 years, it's one of those areas of health that has been chronically underfunded. I think it's not been... I was going to say not been taken seriously. I think it's always been taken seriously, but I don't think it's been understood. And obviously, mental health first aid training has been born from that, and that's been your journey as well. And I think people recognise the importance of first aid training.
Absolutely.
Now, what to do if someone gets knocked over? What to do if someone has a heart attack? What to do if someone has a wound of some description? And I think mental health has been certainly sidelined against physical health. And I think now what you're doing and what you're trying to achieve, I think is critically important, because so many, I don't know what the statistics are, but more and more people are struggling with mental health issues.
Yeah.
Either individually, within a family, certainly in the workplace as well. And I think what you're offering is a really valuable service.
Thank you. Yes, in terms of, as you said, the first aid response, what's really interesting about mental health first aid is that you're actually more likely to come across somebody experiencing a mental or emotional distress and crisis than you are somebody having a heart attack.
Absolutely. Absolutely right. I mean, I'm first aid trained, but I've never had to use it.
Yeah.
But your mental health issues, you pretty much, if you know, I believe if you know how to spot the signs, I think you pretty much bump into people every day with some degree of mental health issue.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's quite a wide spectrum, isn't it? You know, you've got, dare I say it, the less serious end, and you have the much more serious end with, you know, bipolar and psychosis and those sorts of things. But if you can't spot the signs, then you can't help the person, can you?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's really important that we help people into recovery as quickly as possible, because we do know that early intervention can actually help people to recover and actually, in some cases, prevent escalation of the disorder. Because otherwise people can get into crisis quite quickly. And, you know, as you said, we start off with things like mild depression, which untreated can end up in turning into like a severe depression. And it's a continuum, really, where, you know, we start off, as you said, you know, with the signs and spotting the signs and symptoms, and then it can escalate to the point that the person becomes quite clinically ill.
Yeah.
And it can be quite prevented, and obviously the as you said, the clinical end and the extreme would be that somebody would become suicidal, and that's a big part of what we do is suicide prevention and intervention.
It is a topic I'm very passionate about. Again, for those of you that know me, you'll know my story about my brother. But also, you know, being a Samaritan's volunteer as well, you know, mental health, I see it on the front line. And it is a huge issue. I'm just going to say a problem. It's not a problem. It is an issue, though. And it's an issue that doesn't seem to be going away. It doesn't seem to be effectively dealt with. And suicide, I think the recent stats from Mind, I think in 2016, they said around 25% of people in any 12-month period will I won't say suffer, but they will struggle. They will struggle with a mental health issue.
Yeah.
The last person I spoke to in Mind, which was about 6 months ago, suggested it's a lot higher than that, because these are only the reported cases.
Yeah.
And they reckon it could be as high as 1 in 3, possibly 1 in 2 people will suffer somewhere on that spectrum of mental health issues. They will suffer in any 12-month period. Yeah. They will struggle with those issues.
Yeah, yes, Neil, so as you said, you're right, and it's common, mental health issues are common, we use the figure 1 in 4, but in my experience, just anecdotally, I feel that that is a lot higher. One in four people experiencing a mental health illness at some point in their life. But we do know that statistically, it's also one in six in the workplace.
Mm-hmm.
So, and if we're thinking of workplace mental health issues, one in six is quite a large number.
Yeah.
And often it accounts for a lot of absenteeism. And often people don't want to actually tell their employers that they're experiencing a mental or emotional distress. So then they will maybe ring in sick for another reason. And again, 1 or 2 days off to recover. But then it may be that that person then doesn't get the help they need and ends up going off long-term sick, which is a huge problem in terms of productivity and for employers in terms of financially, but also to the individual who could then enter poverty quite quickly and become, you know, it would be classed as a disability because, it, you know, mental health, if it's not addressed, mental health issues can be disabling.
Yeah. And so we can see that how it can escalate from what might be considered a relatively minor issue into much more serious issues. And equally there, you touched on the fact that, you know, with employers, they have a responsibility.
Yeah.
You know, and I think responsible employers that are trained to recognise mental health issues, I think that's a really, commendable thing, because, like you say, it's not a physical problem; it's a hidden issue, and people are not always alert or awake to the signs of what's going on. You know, and as you say, employees, because there is a fear of losing jobs as well these days, they will tend to hide it. And, you know, the problem will just get worse. So let's talk a little bit more about your actual services, about what you do and how you help people and the sorts of businesses and people that you work with and how you can benefit those people as well.
So a lot of the work, I mean, there's two elements to it. I mean, well, I guess there's sort of three elements to it, really. There's the community element, so working with communities to give them skills to notice when people in that community may be experiencing some mental distress that they need some support with. And then there's the workplace element and work with schools and colleges. So there's those three sort of different work streams, really. And what it is about looking at how we can build a sustainable approach so that how we can give people working within those industries the skills to be the, for want of a better person, as like single point of contact person. So the mental health first aider is equipped to spot signs and symptoms, to respond effectively, to signpost them towards the right help and support, and for the organisations to think how they can work in a way that provides equality and reduces some of the power balances that may be causing stress to the people that work within them or to the students, so that we're sort of like looking at how systems can be fairer as well within the organisation, so that people are not being, you know, judged and stigmatised because of their mental health issues. So we want to break down stigma and discrimination within all of these settings. So what we do is provide training, professional training for mental health first aiders. So we offer a 2-day, a 1-day or a half day, but we also do bespoke work. So there may be an issue in a particular setting where they might find there's high levels of people experiencing eating disorders or self-harm, or maybe suicidal ideation. So it's really helping the organisation to look at any sort of like gaps in the skill set, any kind of risks or trigger points that there may be there that we can then go in and help support and provide the training and advice in that capacity. But then also we will be looking at how we can build in a wellbeing approach, because we don't just want to look at problems, we want to look at solutions.
Yeah, absolutely right. I think that's really important. And it's interesting the sorts of organisations that you've worked with in the past. So, you know, things like the police and the NHS and, you know, perhaps you could talk a little bit more about those and how you've helped those.
So I've worked with many different, in a, also in a multi-agency context. So I mean, the police are not really trained or haven't historically been trained in issues around mental health, but often what they've told us is that they're called out as first responders to deal with people that are feeling suicidal and that people are having psychosis and things like this. And obviously their job is as law enforcement officers. They're not necessarily trained in that, and they are brilliant, and they you know, do their best to assist. But obviously there's also like what we refer to as secondary trauma, so like vicarious trauma, where the individuals that are supporting those in distress can then become distressed themselves. So it's about them sort of having the confidence to actually know that they're working with a framework approach, because we work with a sort of like an algorithm, like an acronym that we use, which we apply. We have two of them on the mental health first aid an aid memoir, really. And what we've done is gone in and given them the skills so that when they're faced with these challenges, that they're actually able to say, well, we know actually what to do. We've got an evidence-based approach. That is, you know, a nationwide approach. I mean, the suicide prevention is, you know, it goes above and beyond the UK. It's actually international. So, you know, it's a tried and tested approach, so people can feel confident knowing they're using a tool and a model that they can have faith and belief in. So that's really what we do. And then we offer support. So if somebody wanted to then contact us to sort of, you know, to debrief or something like that, have a chat through, you know, what's happened, we provide that. So that's, and obviously schools, you know, we work with schools because we know that there is an onus now on schools to have like a mental health lead. That person's often the designated safeguarding officer lead, might take on that dual role, or the special educational needs officer, they may take on that role. Mm-hmm. But we know that these skills are not generally taught. So these are skills that, and techniques and strategies that we will go in and teach in addition to their sort of regular mandatory training, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's really good as well that you don't just do a blanket, you know, 1 day, 2 day course. You can actually tailor it to the needs of a particular organisation. I think that's because businesses will have individual requirements and individual needs, and I don't think it's a case of one size fits all.
No.
So I think your ability to offer a bespoke service, I think is really, really good. And offering that support as well afterwards, you know, it's not about just going in, educating and leaving. Being able to be there, because it's not a quick fix. No. And it is an ongoing process, isn't it?
Absolutely. Because what we do, we teach a lot of self-care. Because obviously assisting somebody who's in crisis can be quite upsetting for the individual themselves. So they also... We always teach, like you would in any sort of like first aid situation, you always get the person to look around and
assess the situation, assess the environment.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's one of the things that we do. So I use like mindful techniques, and I'm a laughter yoga instructor, and we think about, you know, implementing some strategies in the workplace that can, you know, improve the health and well-being of staff. So it could be very simple things like a lunchtime walk. Mm-hmm. It could be a lunchtime bring and share. It could be meditation, maybe a relaxation area within the setting. So it's really looking at the space they've got, how it can be used, kind of like maybe some clinical supervision or counselling services. So we look at it sort of holistically. We don't just look at mental health in isolation, but we look at all the other kind of contributory factors, you know, that can improve health and well-being, so that we're actually trying to prevent people from becoming unwell, but also have the channels where people can talk about what's happening for them.
Yeah.
So looking at the stresses and the trigger points that are around, and then trying to find sort of like solutions to that. I've been privileged to work with, you know, the local authority, NHS, and sometimes businesses would ask us to come in because they may have maybe a high level of absenteeism.
Yeah.
Or sometimes it could be that there's a staff member that suddenly had a diagnosis of something, like maybe bipolar, or they've realised someone with eating disorder, and they want to upskill their staff. They want to support the individual, but they just don't know how to go about it.
Mm.
And so then they'll ask us to come in and provide some training and support, and maybe put in some wellbeing strategies to assist. So a lot of it is actually reactive, but some of it's preventative, because there are statutory requirements, for instance, with schools, and as you said, the duty of care that employers have. Sometimes we have HR departments that contact us, So it can be for a number of different reasons that people would ask us to come in. But we do that hand-holding where we know that their difficulties and challenges for each organisation is going to be completely unique. So we need to really listen to the client and understand what's happening for them.
Yeah, I think it's really powerful. And of course, from a commercial point of view, as an employer, it's an investment, it's not a cost.
Yeah.
Because if you can help your staff, and as a result, you have more productive, happier, healthier staff with less downtime and less sickness absence, then it becomes an investment in the efficiency of your business. And I think as well, from the staff's point of view, I think if your employer is seen to be looking after you and caring for you, you're more likely to stick with that company. So long term, it can also help to reduce recruitment costs because staff turnover becomes less. So it kind of works on lots of different levels, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It's really, really powerful. So tell me about some successes that you've had with your training courses. Obviously, only mention individuals or companies if you feel that you can do. But can you just give me some general outline of some of the success stories that you've had?
Oh, yes. So, I won't sort of disclose it. But so for instance, there was a setting that we went into that originally they just, it actually came through as through a different channel in the sense that there was a parent who was being, let's say, slightly misunderstood because, when I went in to do an assessment for other reasons, we discovered that this person was experiencing some quite severe mental health issues that were not being recognised or treated. And we were able to go in and offer some support holistically, not only to the parent, but to the whole family, and put in some structure around that. And then as a result of that, we went in to do some professional first aid training, went on to get some funding to offer out a whole set of toolkit to offer parenting advice and to work intergenerationally with the children, the teachers and the parents to embed an actual whole wellbeing approach, which worked really well. And as a result of that, the organisation went on to then go for like award status, and they carried it on as a whole programme themselves, and they're now sustaining it themselves and running their own programmes and getting awards for it. So I'd say that was one that made me feel quite happy.
Yeah, very powerful, right? And changing lives, you can't put a price on that. I think it's fantastic. Well done. So where does the rest of 2019 take you into 2020? What are your plans for the rest of this year going into next year?
So what I'd like to really focus on, because another part of my work is to do with safeguarding, and there's a big link between safeguarding and trauma. Mm-hmm. So I think and obviously some of these issues can lead to suicide. So I think the next thing really is that I'd like to roll out a lot more of the suicide first aid training, because suicide is the largest reason of cause of death in men 20 to 49.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a huge public health issue worldwide, but also in the UK. And so a lot of the areas around Kent and on the Romney Marsh and places like that, people can be quite isolated, and often there's not the services. So it makes these people quite vulnerable. So I'd like to really get out there and start doing some work around suicide prevention, but also doing a lot of the work around wellbeing and laughter workshops, and just giving people the opportunity to find some skills that they can self-soothe and manage their stress. So sort of like a two-pronged approach, really. But I would like to train as many mental health first aiders. I'd like to train at least 1 in 10 across Kent and the Romney Marsh.
Fantastic. And I think it's important, and you mentioned it a few times, it's not just about spotting signs of mental health issues, it's about the positive side of what you can actually do about it.
Yeah.
once you've identified it. It's not just identification. It's a bit like going on a first aid course and spotting someone with a broken leg or a cut, but then not knowing what to do about it. You've got to know how to deal with it.
Absolutely.
And I think your course is very, it encompasses not just the identification, but how to deal with it, the positive side. As you say, the recovery side of it as well. So just to reiterate, who are you looking for? Who would be your ideal client? For people that are listening today or on catch up, what sorts of individuals or businesses are you actually looking for?
Well, actually, anybody who's interested in supporting other people with their mental health and well-being is a perfect client, because everybody has mental health. And it just depends where our mental health is at any given time, whether it's we're in a good place or a bad place. I'd say a client would be somebody who's looking to support. It could be a child, a young person, or in the workplace, or a small business. It, literally anybody could be a potential client, because we all need some support with our mental health, whether we're in crisis or recovery, or whether we feel okay with it. We can always improve it. So it's quite generic. And so I would say anybody who's got an open heart and a mind in to learn, but also people that are maybe open to looking at other kinds of complementary ways of managing moods, maybe things, you know, like I said, like the mindfulness and laughter yoga. You know, we deal with things like meditation and, you know, problem solving, emotional intelligence work. So I'd say really anyone who's open to that type of approach, and obviously, as I said, with a professional training, anybody who's looking for a qualification that they can actually say, we have people in our organization that are mental health first aiders, first responders, and champions, and people that are willing to stand up and actually, you know, make the soft challenge around stigma and discrimination of people living with mental health problems.
Yeah. And of course, from a business's point of view as well, to not identify mental health issues could lead to discrimination.
That's actually a really good point, Neil, because yes, there are disability laws, and we do a lot of work around you know, the issues of disability, because, you know, we do have to bear in mind that mental health issues are protected characteristics under the 2010 Equalities Act, and workplaces do have a duty of care to put in such things as reasonable adjustments for people who may have been off work or are returning to work after a period of absence, or people that may not have been absent, but they may have just flagged up that they need extra support. So yes, there could be sort of, you know, litigation issues, but it's always, there is a duty on the employer to actually spot signs as well. It's not just the onus on the individual to come forward, but an employer should reasonably be able to notice if somebody needs some support and adjustments within the setting. So yes, if somebody's experienced an issue for at least 12 months or more, they would qualify under the law for disability. So it is a huge issue for us to consider. And as you said, you know, a lot of it is really about supporting people to stay in employment, because another thing about mental health issues and those that are living with them, and I speak as somebody with lived experience of depression and anxiety and post-traumatic stress disorder, is that people with lived experience can actually bring a lot to the workplace. So it's not all negative. It's about accepting that people may be able to bring a particular creativity and a different way of thinking and maybe a different kind of empathy. So it is about inclusion, and it's about, you know, having that focus to really work differently and bring out the best qualities in people, and realise that people have just got just as much to offer if they have a hidden disability.
Absolutely right. And I think, you know, I would like to think that all responsible employers would not discriminate against someone with a physical disability. Yeah. If someone was in a wheelchair or they had some other physical ailments, some other physical disability, of course, quite rightly, there are laws against that.
Yeah.
But mental health issues are much more subtle.
Yes.
And if you, you know, spotting someone I use the example in a wheelchair, yeah. you can't miss that.
No.
But spotting someone with depression or anxiety or maybe bipolar or whatever it might be within that spectrum is a lot harder to spot. But if you don't spot it, you can be guilty as an employer of that discrimination. So knowing how to spot the signs, I think, is really, really important.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so if people want to get hold of you, if businesses want to get hold of you, business owners, what's the best way to get hold of you, Bronwyn?
Okay, so I don't know, can I give my the phone number out?
If you want to.
Okay, so the phone number is 07530 965827. Mm-hmm. Or you can email at info@, and wait for it, this is a bit convoluted.
There's a few hyphens here, isn't there?
There's quite a few hyphens, that's because the one we wanted had been taken, so we were only left with the hyphenated version, which is info@this-way-up-well-being.co.uk.
Okay.
And we are on Facebook.
Okay, and what's your Facebook address? Is it This Way Up Wellbeing?
I can't.
Sorry to put you on the spot. What I'll do is, I think I've got the link as well.
Sure.
So when I do the post promotion, I will put all those. I won't put your phone number, but I'll put your website and your Facebook page link on there.
Thank
so people
you.
Will be able to click through. I'd like to thank you again for coming on the show. It's been really good. It's an area that I'm very passionate about. Certainly had first-hand experience of these sorts of things. And I commend you. And, I think it's an area that individuals need to take ownership of, because it might be, a friend or family member that is struggling and needs the help but doesn't know where to turn. But equally, if there's employers out there, you've got to take this seriously, because from a legal point of view, you can be liable. But also it's an investment in, it's what responsible employers should be doing. So thank you for coming on the show. It's been great.
Thank you, Neil. Thank you.
We're going to wrap the show up in a couple of minutes. So I did want to talk about health in the workplace, which follows on nicely from Bronwyn's interview. But what we'll do is we'll carry that across to next week's show, because I wanted to talk about stress in the workplace, talk about burnout and time management and how people can help themselves to manage their own stress. I also want to cover the more physical side. So, whilst I'm a nutritionist, the show is about health. So it's not just about what we eat and what we drink. It's about physical health as well. So I also wanted to talk about back pain. I also wanted to talk about RSI, ways that we can help ourselves in terms of our posture, the way we sit, some tips and some hints. If you've got a very sedentary job, maybe some ways that you can avoid things like back pain and RSI in the job that you're doing. And also to talk about exercise, ways that even if you've got a busy lifestyle and you come home tired, there's some really simple ways that you can actually just increase your exercise levels and your physical activity just bit by bit by just following a few simple guidelines. And we will also talk about eating as well. But what we'll do is we're pretty much out of time for today's show, but we'll carry that forwards on to next week's show, and we'll have a chat about health in the workplace, which, as I said, kind of follows on really nicely from Bronwyn's interview. So we're going to wrap the show up for another week. I'd like to thank Bronwyn again for coming on the show. It's been really good to find out more about what you do. And I do wish you every success for the future. If you'd like to come on the show, as Bronwyn has done today, and talk about what you do and how you got into doing what you do and how your business helps people, and do a little bit of self-promotion at the same time, then please contact me via my website, and we'll see about getting you on the show, on a future show, as a guest. Providing your business is obviously in the health and wellbeing arena. Could be physical health, could be mental health, could be other types of emotional health, anything that's in the health and wellbeing arena, give me a shout and we'll see about getting you on the show for a future date. Quick reminder, if you'd like to contact me via my website, please do so. It's www.i-nutrition.co.uk. And I will say again, you can listen to this show and all previous shows on the media page of my website but also on iTunes as well. Go to iTunes Podcast, tap in the Health Matters Radio Show in the search bar, and you can see and listen to all the previous shows there too. So after the last song, we have the Channel Radio News and Weather. But until the same time next week, I hope you have a great week ahead. Stay happy, stay healthy, and I will catch you in a week's time.
The heart is a blue. Space to rent in this.